What's going on, everyone? Thanks for tuning in. This is the Moron Eyes podcast. We took a trip on this one. We are recording from San Jose, California. Thanks for tuning in. We got a dope show, and it's about to get started now. Now I'm a talent world talent. I'm a talent everywhere I go. Talent world talent. Yeah, I'm a billboard. Talent world talent. I'm broadcasting like a radio. Talent world, you ought to know. I'm brand new. I know one thing's true. I don't even really deserve to know you, but I'm a witness that you did this, and I'm brand new, so I'm ready to go, and I'ma tell the world what they need to know. A slave to myself, but you let me go. I tried getting high, but it left me low. You did what they could never do. You cleaned up my soul and gave me life. I'm so brand new. And
how's it going, everybody? Thanks for tuning into the show. You are listening to the Moron Eyes podcast. I am the man with the eyes of a moron. Got a good show lined up for you. My guest today is Dan. What's going on, Dan?
What's up, guys?
Thanks for doing this, man. I appreciate it. Made it real easy on me, too, man. A couple emails. You were down. I really appreciate that.
Thanks for your interest in my story, man.
Yeah, definitely. Also, too, as usual, we have Jay in the building holding down on the boards.
Yeah. What's happening, y'all?
The way you press play on the YouTubes is incredible, my friend.
Magic play finger. Boop. Word.
Yeah, man. I've been trying to set this up for like a little over a month now. With the show, I usually talk to my friends or people that I know that listen to it just to kind of maybe get ideas of guests I should have. And I was speaking to one of my really close friends, Andrew, and he was telling me about a good story that his cousin had been through and had lived. So I reached out and I wanted to talk to Dan because Dan has a crazy, I just got a little snippet of the story, but a crazy story of drug use and drug abuse, addiction, and finding the Lord in the process. So I decided to take a trip out here to San Jose, and I guess I just wanted to get started with, tell us a little bit about your upbringing, man. You're from out here in San Jose originally, right?
Yeah, so I grew up here in San Jose. My mom and dad, they didn't make it, so they got divorced. And being a single parent, it was hard for my mom to take care of me. So we moved in with my uncle, and my grandma and grandpa lived there, and my other uncle lived there. Big family, right?
Mm-hmm. How old are you around this time?
I was a baby.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so,
I was
okay.
A baby. So we actually lived there for a little bit. She tried to make it on her own, couldn't make it. We ended up just pretty much staying there.
You had siblings already?
I had no brothers and sisters.
Okay.
Yeah, I was the only child. So, you know, I grew up as a child in this house with my uncle, and there's a lot of drinking, a lot of alcohol, and you know, this is what I seen. Every weekend, you know, there would be a party at either my house or my aunt's house,
uh-huh.
The Garcia family,
yeah.
Or my uncle Alvin's house. It was, you know, we would either be at one of those houses, and there was always a lot of drinking. You know?
And would you say it was just people enjoying themselves, or was it kind of like a little more than that?
You know,
that,
typical
or?
Mexican family.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
Sometimes it gets out of hand. You know, maybe a fight might break out.
And, yeah, I know what you're talking about there.
It's typical, you know, Mexican family. So, I mean, and you know, as far as my uncles, they drank a lot, but they were real responsible. You know, they went to work every day, hungover.
Yeah,
you know,
they took care of what they needed to do.
Yeah, yeah, you know, so. But this is what I grew up watching, you know. And,
right.
As I grew up, you know, my older cousins were experimenting with drugs, and I got introduced by drugs through my cousins and even friends, right? And so I smoked my first joint like 11 years old.
Okay. Right?
And from there, I just experimented all the way through high school. By high school, I've already done smoking weed, drinking, cocaine.
So when you, like, the first time you smoked, did you know already, like, wow, I like this. This is something I'm feeling. Or was it more just like everyone's doing it and I want to be a part of that?
It was that, too. It was a little both, you know, the feeling plus, you know, just following the crowd, you know.
Yeah,
I was
yeah.
always following the crowd, you know. I was always a follower, right, growing up. Never really had my own identity, you know, because growing up by myself, I really didn't. My uncle's out drank all the time. He really wasn't a big influence on me as being a man.
Right.
He never really poured into me.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So I think that had a lot to do with me searching, meeting other people, and just learning things on my own. Everything I learned growing up was trial and error, you know?
Do you think you took, like, bits and pieces from, like, men that were older than you as far as trying to get a,
oh, yeah,
like a father figure type deal?
Yeah, you know. I have one uncle that was he really took time to take me to sports events and, you know, he was there more than the others.
Right.
You know, I had, and then even when you come from a big Mexican family, you have that one uncle that's always spun out, right?
Yeah, yeah. And, yes, you do.
Right. We got him too.
Yeah.
We got him too.
Yeah. It could be your uncle or your aunt. Well, you know,
yeah,
there's always one of those, and he was one of those, you know, and he lived with me.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I was seeing his kind of character too. Like, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with Uncle Pete, right?
Yeah.
You know, and so anyway, yeah, like I said, well, by the time I got to high school, you know, I've already done methamphetamines, crack, cocaine, you know, just snorting coke.
And when you're doing all this, are you like, are you involved in gangs too? Or are you just nothing like that?
At that time, gangs weren't really like a thing. Gangs came like in the 90s. You know what I mean?
So what, yeah, you know what year are we talking around right here?
Okay. Like, that's in 87. So
okay.
By 87,
so
I was 87.
A senior. Oh, you're a senior in high school.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, and I didn't graduate high school because of my, you know, drug addictions and just not caring about nothing, you know, just about partying and hooking up with girls, you know, and hanging out with the party crew, you know.
And your dad wasn't around at all? Like, you had no contact with him at all?
I see my dad. The last time I can remember was I was probably 5, and he gave me a train set for Christmas, and that was the last time I seen him.
Right? Wow.
So, you know, from there, you know, I ended up working, you know, ended up landing a job at UPS. You know, I worked there for like 5 years. And
while you were still using?
Still using, yeah, still using.
That's a pretty good job to land.
It's a good, it's a
very
career
good
job.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
And
were you a loader or unloader?
I was both. I unloaded, I loaded, and I drove, right?
Oh, wow.
So I did loading, unloading for like 2 years, and then I drove for like 5, right? And then my addictions just got worse. I found other drivers I like to use, and we just partied all the time. And, you know, if I wasn't partying with them, I was partying with some other friends of mine, you know, and my addictions made me not, you know, call in sick and not show up to work. And,
yeah.
And
did you feel like as somebody that was using at the time, it was easy for you to, like, see who else is, like, down to party? Like, you could just tell.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Oh. I was always looking for someone and somewhere to go because I was living at my uncle's house. I can't smoke dope at my uncle's house.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So I was always looking for somewhere to go, right?
Yeah.
And the drugs I was using by that time were methamphetamines, and, you know, that lasts for days, dude.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm not sleeping, so I need to find somewhere to go.
To chill.
Know? And yeah. If I wasn't doing that, I was driving around late at night, you know, just spun out of my mind, and, you know, I was starting to get arrested, and, you know.
What were some of the arrests for, like the earlier ones?
Always
stealing
driving,
stuff or?
Driving on under the influence and possession, you know, because wherever I was going, I had
to. So, like,
dope
DUIs,
on
you mean? Like alcohol?
It
or?
Wasn't actually a DUI, but that was the. The reason why they got me. I've never gotten a DUI, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's good. I mean, it seems like I got way too many people,
I,
man.
You know what? I don't know if it's because I did pretty good when I was drunk driving. You know? I do give myself credit for that.
I always feel bad about laughing when people say that stuff, but it's just, it's funny, man.
I've been with people that are just like, what are you doing, dude? You know, like, can you? Let me drive. You know?
I got this.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
I'm good.
So, were you riding dirty at any point? You lose your license? Oh,
I lost my license when I was a kid because I was racing around town, you know. And my mom got me my first truck when I was only 17. It was a brand new little mini truck. And
oh, wow.
I was often, you know, I never came home, you know. But that was the only time I lost my license, never for drug use or alcohol. Yeah.
Okay. So I know, like, for where we're from in Modesto and that area, the Central Valley, like, meth, especially, and other drugs are just so, like, prominent, man. They're, like, taking over really bad. And it's always been like that since my childhood. I've seen it since there to now. Was that the same scene out here? Like, I'm not really familiar. I never had fam out here. I don't know too much about San Jose. Was that kind of the same deal? Or
when I started doing meth, really, a lot of people didn't do it, you know, especially smoke it,
right?
I mean, I was smoking it on foil, you know, and, you know, we'd be at parties and then we would start smoking. And they're like, oh, my God, that stinks. Go in the garage. Just, you know.
So it was, yeah, it was frowned upon, like, yeah.
Yeah, not, it was frowned upon, right?
So, not and then don't I, do it. Just go in a different room.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Hey, can you go out in the backyard with that, please?
So, you know, and then from there, it just, a lot of people started to smoke it after that, you know.
Yeah.
And it was like a fad, like you said, and it just took off. And, you know, where you're at, I mean, that's where they're making it.
Exactly,
I mean, they
yeah.
call
that's the homeland.
The
CHP capital.
Calls Highway 99, Crystal Meth Highway. Mm-hmm. That's what they named it, yeah. Highway 99. But anyway,
I never heard that, but I believe it for sure.
We're
like the capital of it, dude. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. So after I lost that job, I ended up selling dope, and I got caught up, and had to do some time. You know,
when you were selling dope, were you selling enough to like be able to use from there and just kind of like
that was my. I mean, I never made no money on it. I just did it just to stay high. And
that was
always,
working
and
for a while.
Have it. You know, I made it work.
Yeah.
You know, all the time. I mean, so you know, I ended up losing the job at UPS, and that's what I did. And then I got caught up, and you know, arrested. And when I was in jail, I ended up going to a program. You know, they introduced the 12 steps and all that, NAAA, and helping you when you get out. And
at that time, are you like taking that pretty serious, or you're kind of just going with the flow?
Yeah, at the time I was like, okay, I just lost this nice job, man, a career job, right?
Yeah.
Blew it, and what am I gonna do now? Because I really didn't, you know, I didn't go to school for anything, and I don't know anything else but delivering, you know. And so I got out, and I stopped using meth, controlled substances. Mm-hmm. But I was drinking heavily, right, to make up for it,
right?
And I met this girl, and then she had friends that were in this temp agency. They hooked me up, and I ended up getting a job at Stanford University.
Right? Okay.
So I worked there in the medical records department. And
what were you doing there exactly?
Medical records filing and just, know. I've never had an office job, you know, and so this is something totally new to me. So, you know, I ended up making it work, man. I worked there for like 7 years. Right?
And those 7 years you weren't using anymore?
In the beginning, I wasn't using meth. I was just drinking a lot, right, like I said, to make up for not using meth. And one day my friend offered me a line of coke, and I was like, yeah, I really didn't have a problem with coke. I'll do a line of coke. And that just set me off again, man. And I started
and you'd already dabbled with coke at that point, right?
So that set me off and back onto to meth again. And from there, you know, actually, let me backtrack. Before that, I met my baby's mother.
Okay.
And I was still drinking, not using. I was selling.
Mm-hmm.
And then she got pregnant, so I stopped selling, you know, because since my dad wasn't there, I was always like, I'm going to be there for my son.
Yeah, or my child, no matter what. Yeah.
So now fast forward again, you know, that didn't work out. She ended up, you know, having the baby and the relationship didn't work out.
How old are you around this time? This is like still.
I was 30.
Oh, okay.
I was already 30. Yeah.
So this is in the 90s.
Yeah, this is in the 90s. 1999, actually, when my son was born.
Okay.
So it didn't work out with me and his mother. And her parents were from Nicaragua, right? They were here in San Jose. They moved to Roseville. Didn't like it over there. Said it was too cold.
Uh-huh.
So they moved to Orlando, Florida.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, I had a decision on, you know, should I sign the paper to let her take my son or not, you know? And here I am, you know, like I was always wanting to be there for my kid and especially my son, you know, and it was a real tough choice for me to do, but I wasn't really mentally stable, right?
Yeah.
And I ended up letting him go, you know? And then when they left, that's when I just had a real big pity party. And
Yeah.
That's when I just went, you know, I went deep into my addiction. And I actually did it right down the street from here, man. Like the next street over.
Yeah.
I lived over there for like 7 years. You know?
Oh, okay.
And it all went down right there. I just.
Like man, just I, feeling it guilt.
Got so,
and
I, I'll tell you how bad it got. It got so bad where. I mean, I had my son with me too. I was able to get him in the summertime, right? Okay. And I had him with me, and I had no power in the apartment, and I was using a cord from my truck, and connecting it all the way upstairs to my window, to whatever electricity I needed. I was getting it from my truck.
Damn.
You know, just a tweaker status, right? That's how bad it got. And
that's some serious shit, Modesto shit. I've seen that before.
That's crazy.
So that's where my addictions took me, man. And then, you know, during that whole ride of my addiction, you know, I've been jumped. You know, I've been I had my eye socket fractured. I had, you know, the back of my head split open. You know, from a drug deal gone bad. gun to my face. You know, I've been hit by a car. You know, spun out, broke my femur in three places. You know, wow.
And you were saying too that like, so would you agree with me saying that you didn't really have a specific drug of choice? That like,
I was experimenting. I mean, I was getting all the way up to heroin. I was about to start snorting it. You know, a little bit further on in my addiction, but I didn't get there. Luckily, you know, so from there, you know. Let's backtrack to they moved to Florida, had the pity party. So now
how long did the pity party last?
It lasted
a while.
Like 3 years solid. Okay. You know, I lost the job at Stanford because of my addictions, you know, and
was that just like a stop showing up type of thing or just
exactly.
being late?
I had some girl that worked with me selling for me and you know, we're talking through the emails at work and they kind of caught on to that. And then I think she happened to tell on me as well, you know. Not sure about that, but I'm almost positive.
Yeah.
And lost that job. So then it really got deep, you know. And then from there, it only took 2 years and I got arrested again, you know, at that apartment right there.
For dealing?
No, for vandalizing the apartment. Because like I said, I needed electricity. So when I wasn't plugged into my truck, I would plug into the tool shed on the side of the building.
Hey, yo, y'all using this?
Yeah.
Let me hold some of that.
And it just, I was selling dope to my neighbor, too, and she got involved with it. I was even plugging into her apartment, bro. I mean, from her apartment, from the tool shed, or my truck, right?
Making it work.
Making it work, right, with a three-year-old boy, you know. And so, you know, when I got locked up that time, my son ended up going with my mom, and they took care of him until he went back to Florida. And then from there, you know, I was locked up and just, like, hating myself, you know.
What was the longest time you were locked up?
The last run I did was probably around 2 years, maybe a little bit longer, you know, fighting my case and then, you know, going to prison and then getting out, you know.
Yeah.
And but from there, you know, I was getting locked up periodically, you know, from after I got let go from Stanford.
Yeah.
And I was only out like 3 months. 3 months to get locked up, three and get out. And
so would you get locked up and then kind of clean up in there and then come back out and use again? Or were you using?
Sometimes I would just get right out and just right to the pipe.
Yeah, yeah.
Right to the pipe, you know, like the last run I went on. Okay, so, you know, I got arrested and then I ended up getting out and just wasn't, I was still using, you know, and I ended up going out with this one girl and we were driving downtown late night and I got pulled over and then they took me in because I was under the influence, you know, and when I got locked up on that one, I was going to court and the cop that arrested me was on vacation.
Right? Oh, wow.
And this is at my my prelim. So this happened to me before. But anyway, with him not being there, he was on vacation. He can't show no proof why I'm there, why he arrested me.
Yeah.
So I got the case dismissed, right?
Wow.
And the public defender was trying so hard to, you know, make me not get it dismissed.
Yeah.
So she's saying you're still gonna be locked up. You got a probation violation. You're not gonna get out. All the time you're gonna be doing, you're not gonna get time served. You know, you're not gonna get no credit for your prison term. It's gonna be dead time.
Whoa!
And I said, just do it, right? So she did it, and then I got back to my cell and I was like, man, I messed up. I should have, you know, I shouldn't have did that, right? And then my cellie was a diabetic, so they popped the door, and it was like 7:30. He gets his medicine.
Uh-huh.
But they called my name, right? And I was like, yeah. They go, Martinez Daniel. I'm like, yeah. They go, roll it up. I was like, hell yeah. I got my stuff, and I was gone, right? And I was in reception, you know, waiting for them to, like, oh, we made a mistake. You know?
Never mind. Roll it back down.
They were just jokes.
I was looking over my shoulders, bro. For the, you know, the whole time I was just sitting there like waiting for them to grab me by my shoulder. And I was like,
probably the most nerve-wracking time ever, right?
I was like, okay, this is crazy. You know, you never get released from jail by mistake.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
So I got they released me, man. They released me, and the reason why is because my probation officer didn't. He must have been hella busy, and he didn't put a hold on me.
Oh, okay.
So by me getting the case dismissed, they have to release me because there's no charges.
Yeah, there's nothing. Yeah.
So I get out. I get out, and then I call my friend. I'm like, dude, come and get me. I'm over here at jail. I was like, how'd you get out? I go, just come pick me yeah. up. I'll tell yeah. you later, right? Now. Come now, right? So he picked me up. And like I said, you know, the first thing I did, boom, right to the pipe.
Yeah.
You know? And so from there, I ended up going to this party house and that I knew of and was partying there. And then, you know, seen old girl and then said, what's up? Let's, you know, went to the hotel.
Yeah.
And then that night, you know, I was like, man, this has got to stop, man. This has got to stop. You know, I just had this revelation like, man, I need to stop this. So I
Were you high still?
I was high.
Yeah.
I mean, I got out Tuesday, and this is Wednesday night. I haven't slept.
Just been partying the whole time.
And then I knew on Thursday I had violation court, right? So I'm like, okay, I'm gonna go to court. I'm gonna take care of this.
Yeah.
Right? So I had her drop me off at court. I gave her my keys to my car. I'm like, give this to my friend, you know, so he can take care of my car.
And this isn't strictly on some. I'm just tired of dealing with this crap, and I want to go get taken care of.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, God hasn't intervened yet.
Yeah.
It was just my decision, and my son was my focus, right?
Okay.
I got to be right for my son because, you know, I can't – she won't send him to me if I can't take care of myself.
Yeah.
Right. So he's my total focus right now, you know, I'm putting effort in. So I show up to court, right, and the same public defender that was defending me Tuesday is there.
Okay.
And she looks at me, and she's like, how did you get out? I go, they let me out. She's like, well, I'm sorry to say they're going to remand you today. I go, I realize that.
Yeah.
Right, so.
She's like, well, why'd you show up?
Yeah. Hey, she did say that, dude. She did say that. She's
are
like.
Are you sure you want to be here?
She said, by the way, why are you here?
Damn.
I'm like, why are you saying that? She's like, well, how come you're not running? You know?
Yeah, you had your chance.
I go, well, you know what? I have some responsibilities I need to take care of, and that's what I want to do. And she's like, okay, well, that's a good choice, I guess. So she goes, go ahead to the remand aisle, right?
Yeah.
So I walk, and I had to walk around this gentleman, right? And the gentleman was an older black man. He was talking to the bailiff. And so by this time, I haven't slept, bro. It's already Thursday morning, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm, like, just ready to go hit my bunk. You know, I'm ready to get this time, get it over with, get out, and start my life back, right? So I go, I sit down. And then
I'm sorry to interrupt, but do you have any idea of like how long you're going to get locked up for if you do go in? You don't have a clue.
I have
at
no
that point.
Idea.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
But I just knew that that charge that I got arrested for with that girl
mm-hmm.
was still pending because they refiled. They're getting ready to, right? So I go sit down, and the gentleman that was I had to walk around, he's looking at me, and he asked me, he goes, excuse me. He goes, do you believe in God? And I said, yeah, I believe in God. You know, I grew up Catholic. My mom took me to church and all
yeah.
that. You know, I know there's a God, but I just never went to church. You know?
Yeah.
So I said, yeah, I believe in God. And then he said, that's good, man. That's good. He goes, I just said a prayer for you. I was like, all right. Threw up a fist. And he said, all right, thank you, man.
Yeah.
And then... you know, just waited for my name to be called. They called my name, and the judge is flipping through the pages. And I was there the week before, incarcerated, though, uh-huh. right? And my probation officer failed to do his job then, too, you know, because that's why they postponed it to the day I was there on that Thursday. So as the judge is flipping through the pages, on Mr. Martinez, it seems that your PO has failed to do his job again. I'm going to release you from being remanded.
Whoa.
And I was like,
that's crazy.
What?
Like, I'm trying to take care of this. Just let me go to sleep.
And then, you know.
But does that mean when the judge says that doesn't mean, like, everything's good, you're free to go? That just means it's going to, like, get refiled again? Or?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know
okay.
at that time, you know. Yeah. So I get that second win, right?
Yeah.
being the dope addict that I am, right?
You guys can't see, but when he said I got the second win, his whole body just came up.
So I get that second win, right? And I'm like, okay, all right. And then he's like, give me my, you know, okay, you're released from being remanded. You need to go see your PO before 5:30 today. You know, hits the what do you
gavel.
Call it? The
gavel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Slams the gavel, and I'm gone, you know. But now I have to walk because, you know, I got dropped off.
And as far as you knew, you were getting locked up.
As I'm walking to where I need to go, I'm thinking about that guy saying that prayer for me, right?
Yeah.
And also, how am I going to give a clean test? Because I'm dirty, right?
Yeah.
I've been using it for the last 3 days. And if I go see my PO, you know, I'm trying to avoid going to prison. I haven't been to prison yet. And
so even though you just got let off, you might get thrown in for peeing bad right now.
Yeah. You know, so anyway, that whole thing is just playing out in my head, man, you know. And I just, that's weird. Dude said a prayer for me, and I get released from being remanded, you know. And then I end up getting home to where I was staying at. I was sleeping on this couch, you know. I was just paying this dude. It was a dope house. Give him $100 a month. Sleep on the couch. Give him dope. And I was cool, you know. Yeah. So I made it to the house, and everyone was like, so what happened at your court case? And I was telling them, and I was all sweating it, and I was like, I need to go see my PO, and I had to get my keys back. You know, I got keys back. Got to my car. I ended up going down there, right? And I was trying to avoid seeing my probation officer, and the lady behind the desk was giving me a hard time, you know. But anyway, my PO never came out to see me. I guess he must have been so busy at that month or something that he didn't even realize who I was, because she called him and said, Daniel Martinez is here, you know.
And he never even came out to come get you?
He never came out to get me, right? So I just filled out the monthly, and I took off.
Yeah.
So within 3 days, I got released from jail. I got released from being remanded. And I got released from being remanded actually
twice.
Twice.
Yeah.
Because if he would have known who I was and, you know, that he hasn't caught up with his paperwork, he would have remanded me right there.
Yeah.
So.
Because not only is he supposed to do that for you, to do that against you, but it's probably making him look like a piece of crap in front of the judge. Like, what are you doing? You're lagging. Yeah. You're not doing your job.
So, you know, even though that guy said a prayer for me, and then, you know, I was in the back of my mind, and being the dope addict that I am, I continued to use, you know. And from there, let's see, I ended up getting picked up late night in front of the house I was at. Mistaken identity, just coincidental.
Yeah.
I was out 3 a.m, going to my car, and a cop was driving by, flashed a light on me, started talking to me, realized I was high, realized I had a warrant, you know, because the PO caught up with his work.
Oh, man.
He issued the warrant. So they took me in. And then from there, I ended up going to prison, right?
Where'd you go?
I went to Tracy for reception.
Yeah.
And then from there, they sent me to Delano, not the reception center. They have two in Delano. They sent me to Kern Valley State Prison 2. It's across the street. So, and I only went to the ranch there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a minimum. It's not, you're outside of the prison.
Yeah, right? Yeah. It's a little more chill.
Yeah.
Or no.
Yeah, I mean.
I'm just assuming.
It's outside, fresh air, but it's still prison. Yeah.
So, anyway, when I got locked up, right, I went to Tracy. And when I got to Tracy, you know, me being a Northern Hispanic, you know, when I get there, I was able to. This is when I knew I was doing really bad, because the first time I got out of my cell to go to Chow. Somebody called me by my nickname. They called me Dapper Dan, right?
Oh.
And I get out of my cell. I turn left. I'm going. And then someone behind me goes, Dapper. And I was like, wow.
I ain't supposed to know none of y'all.
It was.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Did you listen to his episode?
I didn't know you had one.
I have two episodes with him, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Actually, we'll go back and edit out his name, because we weren't supposed to do that. Well, it's not a big deal. What are we at right now, so we know?
Oh, looks like 2850.
Yeah, it's not a no. It's all good. It doesn't matter. We can just edit it out. It's the G Money episode.
Okay.
There's two, the first one's talking about him getting into drugs, and the second one's almost all completely about him being in prison. But they're worth checking out. He bared his soul, man. Definitely.
Yeah. So,
but my bad. Continue.
So anyway, when I was in Tracy, you know, I went to Chow maybe the first week, and then after that, somebody did a removal, and they put all the Northerners on lockdown. So now the tier tenders are black and whites, right? Mm-hmm. And when we got there, they were on lockdown. So now they're doing the tier tending. And the tier tender was this big black dude.
Tier tender means what exactly?
He goes through the tier, like, if, you know, he kind of keeps the peace. He keeps everyone at peace, right? He'll take something for you from the cell and take it to somebody else's cell, okay, right? You know? And that's what he does.
So. And that's, but that's something that he's just doing between everybody, not necessarily something that's, is that okay to do?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
So he would come to my window and, you know, see what's up. And he just got sentenced to life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Big black guy. Like a, he had a wandering eye like Debo. Right. And he would come, and it's funny because we had these little windows, right? Little windows to look out from our door. It wasn't like bars.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he would stick his face right there, and his eye would be wandering.
and you're trying to figure out which one to look
like,
at.
He was big though, right? So you're not gonna say, "Hey, you know, yeah. you look funny or something." You know? So his name was DC, right? Never forget this dude. Never forget this guy. He would come, you know, put his face and went, "What's up, boy? Hey, how you doing today?" You know, and he was saved.
Oh, okay.
And even though he just got sentenced alive, he was saved, right?
Was he around your age, or is he older than you? Or?
Probably a little older than me.
Okay.
And what he would do is he would give me scriptures to read.
Okay.
Right? And that happened to be the only book I had in that cell was the Bible, you know?
Yeah.
So I'd read them, you know, pass some time. And
did you have, like, a genuine interest, or was it more just like, okay, it's here, I need to kill time?
Just passing time. Yeah, man. Yeah. Okay. I was just passing time. I mean, even though, like, that guy said a prayer for me, I was just like, you know, that's when God was intervening, right?
Yeah.
And I was just totally, like, blowing it off like it's just coincidence.
Right.
Right. So, you know, he's had me read these scriptures.
My bad. Before you keep going, were you blowing it off but still kind of in the back of your head? Like, that's something.
Yeah.
Like, you acknowledged it was something. Yeah. It was, like, bigger than you.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Gotcha. Especially that prayer, you know.
And yeah. Then, yeah.
So he'd give me the scriptures to read. And then one day he gave me this list, right? And I'm like, looking at this long, I'm like, what do you want me to do with all these? He's like, I want you to write them. I was like, you want me to write them? I'm like, all right, you know.
Yeah.
So started writing them. And then I realized scriptures are long, bro, right?
Yeah.
So, and there was a big list he gave me. So I was like, I'm not going to do this no more, right? So he
all
would
of a sudden it kind of became a task.
Yeah. Like, and then he'd come by the cell. Hey, how you doing with them scriptures, boy? And I'll be like, I'm not going to do that, man. You know?
Yeah.
And at this time, you know, I've been talking to him and telling him, you know, kind of my story, how I got here.
Okay.
And you know, I messed up some relationships with my family and friends. And, you know, I haven't got no mail, you know, and I just feel real abandoned right now, you know, because of what I've done to myself.
Yeah. Without backtracking too much, we didn't really talk about that. So, like, at that point, are you pretty much burned all your bridges with, like, family and stuff like that? Like, nobody's really
you know,
trying to support you anymore?
Yeah. One of my cousins, he's my age, and I was trying to – because when I got out, I had nowhere to go, right? And I was like, man, I need to try to set up somewhere when I get out, you know? And I was calling him, and he wouldn't accept my phone calls, and he would always come. He would come to see me in jail.
Right.
And he was mad at me because I didn't go to a funeral – to his stepmother, you know, and when I was using, I would never come around my family, you know.
Yeah,
I was
it's so probably the last thing you'd want to do.
I was all sucked up. I didn't look very good, you know.
Right.
And so, you know, that's another thing what addiction does to you. It just removes everything that you know, and you love. It just tears it away from you.
Yeah.
Right? It just removes it from your life. And that is your whole goal, is focusing on getting high and getting it and hanging around people that do it, you know.
Yeah.
So back to Tracy.
In DC?
Yeah. DC, he would give me the scriptures, and I, you know. So he said, "You writing them scriptures?" I said, "No, nah, I'm not going to do it." He's like, "Man, come to the door," right? He goes, "Hey." He goes, "I gave the same lesson to one of your boys down the tier."
Uh-huh. Right?
His wife left him, you know, says she wrote him a letter saying she's going to leave him because she's tired of him coming to prison, right? And you know, she's not going to be there for him when he gets out. So
yeah.
I gave him the same lesson. The day that he finished writing them scriptures, he got a letter in the mail saying she's going to give him one more chance.
Damn.
And I was like, all right. And he goes, by the way, he goes, you're not going to go nowhere. You're on lockdown. He goes, what else?
Where else you got to go?
DC sounds like a smart dude, man.
You know, the only time we came out was for showers or medical. And that
that's
was it.
It.
And that we were getting self-fed in there, right?
Oh, man.
That's why you're saying,
yo,
man.
I can't even imagine, like, yeah. Like that must take so long to adjust and feel. I'd be all like, I got to get out of this room. Like,
that reminds me of that the one DMX lounge, like, 23 hours is locked, the 1 hour that's not. Mm. Like, just, like, stuck. Like, ugh. That yeah. sounds
That's
horrible.
Unreal, man. And then so you you didn't have access to books, really? It was just the Bible that was in there? Or did you guys have access to...
I mean, like, if I wanted a book, I could have asked him, like, hey, TC, you got a, anyone got a book down the
Bring
chair?
Me
you
a book.
Shoot
yeah,
me one?
Okay, I got you. Know? But it's more of that kind of deal.
Yeah.
Why did my brain just go Charlotte's Web?
Charlotte's Web.
I don't know why.
Is that the first book you read?
No. It, I don't
hey,
know
it's
why.
It's a good read. It's a good
yeah,
read.
Yeah, straight
like, with that book.
It's a story of hope.
And then... where did we go from there? I'm sorry.
So
he was asking you about the scriptures and why you hadn't written
so
them down.
So I said, all right, I'll start writing them. I'll start writing them. And then he's all right, you know. So I started writing them, and for some reason I could not stop writing, man. Any time I had, which is a lot, I would write and write and write. And the day that I finished, we got mail, and my cellie used to get most of the mail. And then sorting out the mail, right, and the last letter was a letter to me, and it was from my mom. And I was like,
and you hadn't heard from her in days.
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, and for her to find me in prison is kind of difficult for her, you know.
Right. What did that feel like seeing it? Just
like, dude, I was just like, that is so crazy, you know.
Yeah.
What a coincidence, you know.
I couldn't believe it, right?
Yeah, like just, wow. And I was excited though.
Yeah, for sure, definitely.
So DC cell was above me, right? And then if you bang on the sink, you could talk through the vent.
Uh-huh.
Right? So I called him. I stood up on my sink and I was banging on the vent and I was yelling, DC, DC. He's like, yeah, what's up, boy? And I said, hey, I finished that writing. And he's like, all right, that's good, that's good. I go, hey. He goes, yeah. I go, I got a letter in the mail today. And he's like, didn't I tell you, boy? Didn't I tell you how good God is? I told you. Right? It was crazy, right? I was blown away, you know. So from there,
I mean, if you don't want to dive into it too much, but what was the letter from your mom like? She just wanted to say what's up.
Yeah, it was just, you know, saying how I am and letting her know what's going on, you know, out here. And it's pretty much it. But
word. That's tight.
So from there, you know, from Tracy, I got shipped down south to Delano, and you know, it's a southern prison. So from there, I was like really pretty nervous, you know, my first
yeah.
time in prison. And I was right by the reception entrance, my window, and I just keep seeing LA buses, LA buses, LA buses.
Yeah, nothing. So that was on your mind too, right?
Yeah, I was yeah. like, wow, you know. And then the guys I went up there with, there was only three of us, so four of us that came from Tracy.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got there, we didn't see any Northerners, you know, and it was, you know, we're outnumbered.
Quite a bit.
Yeah, pretty crazy. And so we're in observation, right? You have to see the committee before you get cleared to go to the ranch.
Okay.
They want to make sure that you have no violent charges, like you're not going to go start no crap over there. So
right.
Anyway, when I was in Tracy, they messed up on my CDC number. They gave me a number that already existed to somebody else. So even on the bus right over here to the prison, they were like, you know, they didn't want to let me on the bus because I had two IDs, you know.
Oh, okay.
So there was no one there in reception to fix it, so they just sent, I guess, both files.
Yeah.
Mine and his to the new prison. And when I was in reception for like around a week, they took me out. And I remember that they were walking me to the to reception. And I had two COs on me. They had the big old Super Soaker maces things and they're asking me, well, what did you do? I'm like, I don't know. You're the one that's taking me. I don't know what's
yeah.
going on, you know. And the whole time I was thinking that someone died, you know, in my family.
Right.
And I was just like, wow, it was the longest walk I ever had to take. You know, it was just, man, what is going on? What's happening? You know, I was just so anxious to figure out. And what it was is they wanted to make sure who I was, right? So.
What if the other name was just like this real white, like Todd Johnson? Like, are you Todd? Just, oh, I swear I'm not Todd.
So, you know, they finally figured out who I was, but they had to send my file to get it corrected to Sacramento. So I go back to my cell, you know, a couple weeks pass, and then everyone starts seeing committee. The whole bus that we were on starts seeing committee to get released to the main line to
yeah.
go to the ranch. And I go to committee, and they don't have my file. So I don't get to get cleared. Well, my friends that I went with, they got cleared. And
right.
When they got there, there was no Northerners in the yard. They had to get down locks and socks, you know, and one of the guys curled up in a ball and just turned it in, you know, threw in the towel.
Damn,
got so
dude.
Scared, right?
And so, like, at that point, like, your homies know already, like, oh, as soon as we get there, it's on. Like, we're going to chunk them right then and there?
Well, that's the way it is in prison, man. I mean, depending on where you're going.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're functioning, I mean.
Yeah.
Not to get too deep into politics, but.
No, no, yeah, but that's yeah. crazy. Wow.
So, you know, I ended up getting through all that, right? You know, God had his hand on me, and I didn't see no action. You know, I didn't even, you know, nothing happened.
Right.
You know, so I get out, and if I can backtrack a little bit. And
yeah, go ahead.
When I first, in 97, when I was in that program, my dad reached out to me through a letter when I was incarcerated and said that I had brothers and sisters, and that they want to meet me, and he wants to see me.
Right.
So I gave him that chance, you know, and then we would see each other now and then, but I would totally break them down verbally, you know, like for not being there and just, you know, just real bitter about him leaving me, you know, and I would make it known to him.
Yeah. Know? Which I think so, is pretty a normal thing. I think anybody would want to do that.
Yeah. But, you know, when I finally got to prison, I realized that, you know, here I am not there for my son.
Right.
And people make mistakes.
Yeah.
So I finally forgave him. I wrote him a letter, and I was like, man, I forgive you. And I know you've been trying to,
like, reconnect.
Reconnect and make this work, and I've just been giving you a hard time, and I'm sorry, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, that turned out to be a good thing because, you know, my mom at this time is now sick. She has Alzheimer's, and I had to put her in a home, you know?
Yeah.
Well, actually, she's just diagnosed at this time. So my dad just happened to live, like, two cities down from the prison.
Okay. You
know, so when I got paroled, he picked me up at the bus station.
Oh, okay.
You know, and then he brought me back to San Jose, and my mom was kind of okay at that time, mm-hmm. you know. And so I'm out of prison, right? And I don't know where to go with my life, man. I mean, like I said, I've been such a follower, you know. I mean, it's funny because my celly, right, you know, all you do is talk in there. He's like, man, I can't wait to get out. I'm going to give me some K-Swiss and... You know, I'm gonna get my
fresh pair of whites.
Yeah, I'm gonna get my old jaw back. You know, and man, as soon as I get out, what did I do? My sister takes me to go get some shoes. I buy some K-Swiss. Right? It was just
this is for you, Jimmy.
Yeah,
and I'm not like making laughing at people in prison, but like, it's so hard for me to even comprehend that it's like it's funny to me. Like that's what's gonna really make you feel better. You know, like a fresh pair of new kicks. I get it. You know, that's. Just nuts, dude.
Probably the last thing you want to do is put on some Chucks. I'm like, yeah, this looks too familiar.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know what's terrible is my mom, she sent me, I go, you need to send me some clothes so I can dress out, you know?
Yeah.
So what does she do? She sends me the same clothes that were bagged up that I got arrested in. You know? And I was like, when I opened my bag, I was like, oh, wow.
Oh.
You know?
Thanks. So at the ranch, you can kind of wear, like, I mean, within certain rules, wear whatever you wanted?
No, it was CDC.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Still, okay.
So, yeah. Got out, you know, and my dad took
Drove
me to the house,
to San Jose.
And then my sister took me to Visalia Mall, bought me the K-Swiss, right? And then from there, we actually went to her friend's house. They had a party the night before.
Uh-huh.
And she went to go talk to her, and then they offered me something to drink. They're all, how about a wine cooler? I'm like, all right, yeah. So this is February 11th, I paroled, right?
Okay.
So I had that wine cooler, and that was the last time I drank, you know. And
since now?
Since now,
oh,
yeah.
Wow.
So February 12th was my sobriety date.
And what happened? You drank it and it just wasn't.
I mean, I just drank it just, you know. I don't know.
But what do you think was the difference? Why didn't that open a can of worms like it would have before? Why was it just that?
Probably because,
like,
I just got out of prison.
So,
yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And I didn't really like prison, you know.
So it was in your head already, like, I'm really going to try to straighten up this time. I don't want to go back.
Yeah, because I did a lot of time by myself in prison, you know, in the cell by myself, you know.
Yeah.
Especially after those guys got released, and I was in there by myself, man, in the cell by myself, you know.
Yeah.
And in observation, we were getting cell-fed as well, right, because the prison was brand new then, and they didn't have a functioning kitchen.
Oh,
so they would
okay.
bring food from the other yard and these little carts and give it to us, and you know, it was little portions, cold. It was terrible. It was just terrible, right? So
I bet, dude. I mean, I can't even imagine.
Anyway, you know, like, so I'm still, like, not knowing what I want to do with my life, you know? And my dad brings me back to San Jose, and I can't stay with my mom because she was actually taking care of a lady that had Alzheimer's. My mom was familiar with this because my grandma had it. And she
oh,
was taking
okay.
care of her, right? So a friend of her work knew that she was good with her grandma, with their mom, so she wanted her to watch her aunt. So she was living there, and I can't. That's her place of business, so I couldn't live
there.
Yeah,
exactly.
So I was pretty much homeless, man. I ended up, my aunt, she came down when I got out, and she was driving me around San Jose trying to help me find a home, some kind of recovery home or any kind of home. And I was looking for this one called InVision, because you can live there and work and, you know, get back on your feet.
Yeah. And so it's a program that's helping you, like, get back into society. And
yeah.
Okay.
But I couldn't find it. And I ended up going to Salvation Army. It was right down the street.
Right.
And they said, yeah, man, we'll take you in tomorrow. And I was like, cool. Right. And not knowing it was Christian based, and I had to go to church Wednesday and Sunday every week.
You just knew it was somewhere you can go to sleep.
Not knowing that they were going to take away all my clothes, and I had to get all my clothes from the store.
Oh, okay.
And a suit and a tie, you know, and wear that to church every Wednesday and Sunday. Right.
Yeah.
So what that program does, it just strips you of your identity.
Right.
And makes everybody equal, you know. The program holds like 90 drug addicts, dude. Right. And they all work in the warehouse during the week. It's a 6-month program.
Mm-hmm.
And you're working for Salvation Army, and they have classes, you know, after work, and you have to hit meetings, and they test you all the time, you know. But it's something that I needed, you know, at that time, because here I am, 35 years old now, when I paroled, and I couldn't take care of myself, man. I was physically a man, mentally a child, you know.
Right.
So I just pretty much shut my mouth there for once in my life, you know, and I just
kind of humbled you a bit.
Yeah, kind of humbled me.
Gave you that structure that you needed too.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know what? Let me backtrack too, because my cousin Patrick.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know Patrick, Drew's brother.
Oh yeah. All right. Yeah.
That's another thing that got me when I was in Tracy.
Uh-huh.
I forgot to mention is that I just got out in 2004 from just jail, and then they had his mom and dad's wedding anniversary.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And so I was able to get a car from this girl I was seeing, right, and make it down to the party. And
so we have. I was there.
Oh, were you?
Yeah, for sure.
So we're there, right? Yeah. He's like, "How you doing?" I'm like, "I'm cool. I'm cool. I just got out of jail. I feel good." And he's like, he's just looking at me kind of funny, right? And then he's like, "Why don't you give your life to God?" I'm like, "Give my life to God?" I just looked at him crazy. Like, where did that come from? It was like socking me in the face, right?
He's real straight up.
Yeah. And I talked to him about it, and he says, "Man, it was so hard for me to tell you that."
Really?
You know, but thankfully he did, right? Because when I was in that cell, when, you know, dealing with DC at that time, mm-hmm. and just like, wow, I'm in prison now. This is crazy, right? And I couldn't get his voice out of my head, man. It was like the exit sign that flashes, "Give your life to the Lord. Give your life to the Lord. Give your."
And it just happened to be Patrick telling you over and over in your head.
It was crazy. I mean, I could not shake that voice, right? And that has a lot to do with, you know, the whole God intervention.
Yeah.
You know? God was like, you know, but that guy said a prayer for me, right? And then before that, Patrick introducing me like, "Man, give your life to God," you know?
Yeah.
And I just looked at him like, "You're crazy." And I just went off and still partied, you know, had a good time. And but, yeah, that was like, man.
That's a trip, dude. All these different little mini milestones that all like stick out like a sore thumb to you now in your story. It's crazy.
Now that, you know, as I look back, it was like, it's not a coincidence. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all God's plan.
Yeah.
You know? It's,
like him pulling at you like
the
whole time.
Author of my story.
Yeah, you know? Man, that's nuts.
And, this is the way it's going to go down.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that part right there, man, I cannot shake his voice, man. And it really means a lot to me that he did that for me. But, so forwarding back to Salvation Army, you know, I just shut my mouth, did what I had to do, and got to the program, you know, and, they had transitional housing. I lived there for a while, and during this whole time, I got introduced to a Christian Worship Center.
Okay.
Here in San Jose. And they came from Manteca. They have another church in Manteca. And the pastor over there sent Pastor Dan and Pastor Nick and Pastor Matt down here to San Jose to open up a church. And when you're in the program, you have to do outside churches as long as it is, and the inside churches in Salvation Army. You know,
what do you mean outside churches? Like you're supposed to attend other churches?
What they want you to do is they want you to stay connected with God.
Okay.
Right. So they want to introduce you to churches that are out there when you get released from the program. Right?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So
yeah.
They it was a requirement. You have to do two outside churches and two inside churches or outside Salvation Army corps before your 90 days. Right.
Okay.
So I used to go to that church, you know, and I liked it, you know, and that's why.
What made you like it more than like another church?
Because the church at Salvation Army was kind of dry.
Right.
It was kind of boring, kind of real formal, old hymns, you know.
Yeah.
I remember my first time when I got there, right, you know, my first chapel, it's just all men. And, you know, beginning of the church, you sing worship, right? So all the guys stood up, and I'm just looking at them like, what are these guys doing, you know? They started playing music, and they all started singing to God, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, that's crazy. I'm not doing that, you know? I got the suit on. That's about as far as I'm going to go, right? You know, this is kind of uncomfortable anyway. And
yeah.
So it seemed like the service took forever, dude, right? So, you know, a couple more chapels. I finally start standing up. I start singing the song sheets, man, and I start to learn the words, you know, and before you know it, man, I don't need the song sheet no more. I'm singing with the guys, and I get this urge. Like, I feel like I want to cry, man. You know, just the words of the song, and it scared me. I was like, why do I feel like that? That's weird, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm last thing I was going to do is let those guys see me crying.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, oh, nah.
Yeah, like, so did you think, like, back then you equated it to, like, weakness? Like, showing emotion like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was just a weird feeling, and it scared me. You know, and so like I said, I got introduced to this church, and I figured, man, I can't go wrong hanging around church folks, right?
Yeah.
So I started doing all the things that, you know, they had little, you know, things on the weekend. I would go to events, I would go to them, or Bible studies on Fridays. And on Fridays, they had these kids that were from 18 years to 25, and they would devote themselves to God for 10 months. It's a discipleship.
Oh, okay.
Called the Master's Commission.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go to their Bible study, and they would sing worship, and Pastor Nick he was the pastor over them. He would give the word, or sometimes the kids would give the word, and it was real inspiring. And these kids, when they sang it, they just ushered in the presence of the Lord, and they would just be crying, you know, and singing to God. And that was my green light, man. I started crying like a baby there. And at that Bible study is where I finally surrendered my life to the Lord. You know, I just, you know, all these interventions were just adding up so much that I just, man, okay, like, what do you want?
Yeah,
you know, here I am.
I finally acknowledged it.
Okay, you got my attention, right?
Yeah.
So from there, man, it just life has been so good, man.
That's awesome.
Everything right here is all from God, man. Everything, you know.
We're at a pretty nice apartment here in San Jose right now. I was impressed going to the building.
Nice looking area and all of that.
Definitely.
So, you know, from there, I started taking the guys to church, you know.
Which guys?
The guys at Salvation Army.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, the guys.
So the one that you, yeah, okay,
after
yeah.
I graduated, and I've been doing that ever since. This is how I stay sober.
When did you, what year was it when you surrendered yourself to him?
2007.
Okay.
Or 6.
2006?
6, yeah.
And it's like maybe two-part question. What are like some of the things that you feel like blessings that you received through that? And then also too, like, what are things that you fight with because you're a Christian? Like things that you find difficult to deal with as a Christian?
Well, the blessings, I mean, we're sitting on the blessings. I mean, it's not modern, you know, but, you know, I don't make that much money right now, you know?
Right.
I mean, I do, but I've made more, you know, at UPS, Stanford, and, you know, the job I'm at now, I started it when I graduated Salvation Army. I've been there 8 years now, and I'm the boss, you know, so
that's
kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a blessing right there. But
obviously, like, you know, sobriety, that too, you know what I mean? But just, yeah.
Yeah. I got my wife, you know. I met my wife in my addiction, mm-hmm. right? And you know, we just didn't. I didn't like her, man. I did not like that woman, man. I mean, there's been times where I was with her, I just wanted to walk out of the car at the red light. Like, I just gotta get out of here.
This would be so much less painful.
Yeah, I'd rather walk than just listen to her mouth, right? So anyway, you know, that didn't work out. And then it's funny because when I graduated Salvation Army, I found the old phone book.
Right? And you found it.
And I started digging. All right, okay, this one don't work. You know, this is years past, right? So yeah. I seen that book, and she's the only one that answered.
No right? way.
And she didn't remember me.
She did it?
No.
Oh, blow to your ego a little bit.
Yeah. So I'm like, all right, we got a mutual friend. Well, give me Margaret's number because I want to see how she's doing, you know. And then she finally texted me back, oh, I know who you are now. I feel so embarrassed. And da, da, da. So turns out she was doing the same thing when I met her. She was going to the club. She just broke up with her baby's dad, and she was out there partying, right?
Uh-huh.
And, you know, so when I got out and I'm changing my life, she's doing the same thing, still going to the club drinking. And I was like, I don't want to do this.
Yeah, you don't want to fall into
I don't want to be in this element. You
right.
know? And she's like, all right. So, you know, we remained friends. She would call me now and then. And then she started calling me saying, hey, I have this alcohol problem. You know, I'm like, well, go to a meeting. You know, go to church.
Yeah.
Talk to you later. You know.
And she, you purposely do that? Like,
yeah, because I didn't want to deal with her. You know, I didn't want to deal with her. I had a lot of problems with myself trying to get back on my feet.
Yeah, right. That was pretty smart of you, man.
So I said, yeah, do that. And so she didn't do it, you know, because she called me again, you know, maybe a month later and said, hey, I really need your help because I can't stay clean, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, well, why don't you come to church? You know, come to church. And so she started coming to church with me, and we've been together ever since, you know, got married. She's a blessing.
Right on,
big
man.
Big blessing. Because of me and her, you know, we have this place. You know, the first time we did our taxes together, tax lady's like, you know, you guys can buy a house. And we're like, we can? Yeah. All right. So she kind of like declared that over us. We started looking, and here we are.
You know? That's awesome.
And when we got this place, you know, we didn't have nothing. You know, I mean, all the money went into getting it, you know, so we didn't have no money for furniture and stuff, you know. One thing we could afford was a bed, and like the stools that we're sitting on, right, and that entertainment center was given to us, right?
Oh, wow.
I mean, it's old. TV too. Wow, too,
the whole, you know, setup's nice, man.
Yes,
and
it's then, cool. It works, man. It's nice.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Got it for free, right?
Yeah.
And then I got those couches from somebody else, right?
That's and, what's up.
Even those speakers over there, got those for free, right? Now, if you look at everything, it all matches.
Yeah, it looks like, yeah. It looks like you guys went together and shopped everything and copped everything.
But that's how God is, man. God, he's a provider, man. He wants you to look good.
Yeah, so, that's what's up.
I mean, the stools are even the same color, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So that's one of the blessings. And I've seen so many miracles, you know, being saved now. It's amazing, you know.
Yeah.
God is real. God is real. And I'm just so thankful that he took time to intervene in my life when I wasn't even looking for him. I didn't even care about God. I didn't even, you know, he was the last thing on my mind.
Right.
Know? But for him to, you know, intervene like that and for me to answer the call has been a blessing, you know. So, you know, I take the guys every Sunday. I've been doing that since then, except for Raider games, because I'm I got season tickets.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, I totally understand.
And
that.
I'm still a sinner. Right? So. Yeah.
This is why I do the token. Hey, man, this might be a year. Like, you know, this could definitely be your guys' year.
Yeah, yeah.
No, honestly, all jokes aside, like, I got so many buddies that are – I'm not super into football. I'm way more into basketball.
Okay.
But I have a bunch of buddies that are Raiders fans, and I genuinely want the Raiders to have a good year for my friends.
Yeah.
Like, my friends hold them down because I'm a Kings fan at basketball, and they suck, and, you know, their golden era is gone. So I'm, like, legitimately rooting, like, come on, man, have a good year for my friends. Like, they're always so disappointed. And
they're always there for you.
And they're always getting ragged on and stuff, and it's like, that's not cool, man. Like, the Raiders have a legacy, dude. Like, their back years, you know, are solid, and they need to hopefully come back to form because I want to see my friends happy for once in regards to that, dude.
There you go.
Yeah.
So how'd you end up being a Raiders fan? All the Garcias, hardcore 49er fans.
You know, to be honest, man, I used to like both teams growing up,
mm-hmm.
right? And then I preferred the Raiders better.
Okay.
Right? I preferred the Raiders better. And then, you know, as the years gone on, that's when the Niners were just doing their thing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
They were doing their thing. And then It wasn't just, you know, my cousins, but it's just Niner fans in general, man. They started, we got 5 rings. How many rings you got? You know, it's just like, come on, man. It's,
you've heard them all.
Yeah, I heard them all, man. So,
hey, as a Bears fan, I'm still living in 85.
Oh, that's right. 85 Bears.
Well,
that was a team, though.
Yeah, yeah. Dude, exactly. I think we're good as far as wrapping up, unless there's something else you didn't touch on you want to share with or anything like that.
Well, no. Just, I mean, how I stay sober today is, you know, helping the guys.
Yeah,
I don't do meetings no more. You know, I did it when I was in the program.
Mm-hmm.
But my sobriety is all through my faith.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so what I do is I stay connected with Salvation Army guys. I go to a Bible study every week, you know.
And maybe some advice you could give to somebody that's listening that maybe has a problem with addiction. You know, like, what's advice you want to give them?
You know, if you're stuck in your addiction, just surrender. You know, if you can't, because some people, it takes them. I don't know, like me was going to prison, right?
Right.
They have to reach their
bottom.
Their bottom, right?
Yeah.
You know, and until they reach that, until they get that, like, you know, moment where they're like, man, I need to stop. I mean, they're not
everybody's
gonna stop.
Bottom's different.
Yeah. I mean, I help so many people that are not just in the program, but are not in the program or just living life. Still using.
Yeah.
And I get, man, so fresh, and I try to help them, but they don't want to help themselves. But if you want to stop using, man, you just got to surrender, you know, and find a support group, you know. And they have this cliche, they say stay connected, right?
Mm-hmm.
So either if it's meetings, if it's church, you know, if it's somebody in that's affiliated with the NAAA, just reach out to somebody. Tell them I need help, you know. You have to
surrender. Instead of keeping it to yourself,
yeah.
And just.
You know, so. The first key is surrendering.
Right.
Right. You have to surrender and just lift up your hand and say, man, I'm done. I don't want this life no more. And just, you know, you got to stay connected with those people that are going to help you. Right.
Yeah.
And that's what I do. That's why I stay sober as well. I have gentlemen in my life from my church that I can call them and I can say, hey, man, I'm going through this right now. Can you pray for me? You know, and they'll pray for me.
Yeah.
And I do the same for them, you know, and, just get a support group, man, and go to meetings, you know, go to church, you know. If I can leave my email, if they want to contact me, you know.
Man, feel free, please, if you don't mind doing that.
DDGM69@yahoo.com. So Dapper Dan Garnica Martinez, the year I was born, 69,
mm-hmm.
@yahoo.com. Feel free to email me, you know, if you have any, especially if you're in the South Bay, you want to go to church, I'll pick you up. I got the keys to the van to church. I'll pick you up.
That's awesome,
right,
man.
So,
and also too, can you share with them how they could find the YouTube clip? The Crusader? Is it Crusader?
The Overcomer.
The Overcomer. That way, so people can kind of get a visual too. You
well,
know,
if they
it.
Email me,
uh-huh.
I'll send them the link.
Okay, cool. Yeah,
because I don't know how to other.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So we did an Overcomers video at my church. Pastor wanted to give my story, my testimony, and. You've seen the
yeah,
result.
It's a cool, like, I think 5 or 6 minute video,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
kind of like the story that we just shared right now. And I like when I hear stuff, if I can see a visual of the things too, I enjoy like putting that all together. So if anybody wants to check that out too, give him a shout out on the emails. Thanks again for doing this, man. I mean, we didn't even really know each other. I just reached out, and it's really awesome of you doing that. I really appreciate it. I think we got a dope episode.
Yeah. Another dope one in the can. So
definitely.
Cool.
Yeah.
So everyone else out there listening, tune in. We'll have another show for you next week. Thanks for checking it out. We'll talk to you later. Peace.
All right. You play.